When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But it burns too bright, so I say, who? No, no.
Welcome to the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast, a Southern Storm. A bold, liberating rock, shot through with blues, soul, and gospel. And now, your hosts for the show, Brian Jones and Jason Johannes.
Welcome to another episode of the All Things Blues and Southern Rock Podcast on Pantheon Podcast, where you can go to find your most preferred music genre podcast, also home of the Metallica Podcast. And with me always is Jason. What's your world looking like right now?
Ah, geez, man. I'll tell you what, just preparing for the holidays, you know, Kids getting ready to come back from college here in another week and just hopefully have a little R&R and some chance to check out and listen to some music. Brian, what's going on with you?
Cool. Well, you know, the latest thing that apparently that we're my wife and I are going to be going to all three shows of the Blackberry Smoke at the Shed in May. And so
awesome.
Hopefully we can, you know, whoever can make that would be cool to have some sort of gathering of the All Things Blues and Southern Rock, State of America, Stay Tall gathering, perhaps.
Maybe. Yeah. So I guess anybody who's listening now, like get your tickets, get ready out there, contact Brian, and I'm sure he'll be sending some more stuff out through Facebook and everything else about meetups as we get closer to those dates.
Oh, and so, you know, I email a little bit with Richard Young from the Kentucky Headhunters, of course, and he's trying to help us get in touch with Fred to have him on. But I've been talking to him, Richard and Boone, you know, texting, messaging back and forth, because they kind of said, hey, well, you know, hang out. They're playing in Fargo December 29th. And of course, Boone does the merch. So, and I was talking to him about it, and I was talking to Richard, and I'm like, you know, wondering how we can meet up, whatever. And I haven't got my ticket yet, but I'm going to get it. And he's like, don't get your ticket yet, man. We got you covered. So we're on the guest list.
Love it. That's what a guy. That's so cool. And you know what? And that's good. We do a lot of stuff with the Headhunters. We love those guys. And I think that's a nice thing.
Yeah. So what do you got? You got a show coming up here.
I do. So Friday, the 9th, this Friday, the 9th, I think it's the 9th, right? The 8th. Them Dirty Roses in Columbus, Ohio at the Bluestone. Our friends, Them Dirty Roses, playing a really cool rock club. It's a converted church. I saw Dorothy and Joyous Whoop there before, but they are opening for the Steelwood. So I'm hoping up to catch up with Andrew and crew before or after the show and see what's going on. But am excited to see them play again because they're so good live and play on a pretty nice size stage, a nice venue.
Yeah, man. It's always good to run into those guys. It's, you know, I think they're one of the few of our guests that we've had on. We've both, you know, well, besides Blackberry Smoke, we've both been to their shows, but you know, someone that we both met in person. Well, Charlie falls into that category as well. But yeah, them guys from Them Dirty Roses, and The Steelwoods, they're from Alabama too, so I think those guys back a ways.
I mean, that's a good bill for them to be on, and it's nice to see them Dirty Roses growing, playing some bigger shows, and like that's what they need to do. And they're just a great live band, as you can attest to. And anybody that's listening right now should check out their music.
They're ascending. They're definitely ascending.
They're ascending for sure.
So,
we want to talk about the East Coast and what's like rock bands from the East Coast. And like
the East Coast, you know. Well, we've of course Brooklyn. We know folks from Brooklyn, of course, Jane Lee Hooker and Rob Flores and Mojo, the 10 Ton Mojo. Sorry,
10 Ton Mojo guys. Yeah, so Lizzie from Lizzie and the Makers, that group here, and then we had GA20 on out of the Boston, New England area last year. A great 3-piece blues band, and now what, Brian? Now we know another blues rock band from the Northeast.
Yeah, and a band that I didn't come across on my own. Our buddy Seth Miller, of course, from the Stay Tall gang, and he told us about the Delta Generators. He said, "You guys got to listen to these guys. You got to hear these guys. You got to have them on." And he has been a great help in getting us hooked up with the Delta Generators. We got Rick and Brian from the Delta Generators. And like we said, we've had the Brooklyn area people, but not besides GA20, that are next band from the Boston area.
We're moving up the coast from New York to Boston.
Yeah, it is that way, right?
We're just moving. Now we just got to find some people, like eventually we're going to get up to Vermont and Maine and all that stuff. So, but right now, thanks, Seth Miller. Seth is a great musician on his own. And for him to recommend a band, Brian, we're always going to pay attention.
Yeah, it's, we're getting more into the blues part of, this podcast. And, they talked about how, they're kind of, blues based or blues influenced, but, kind of a blues rock band.
And very cool, very eclectic kind of what they do. And they're evolving into, whatever they're coming into. And you'll hear about it in the interview.
Yeah. So, instead of listening to us try to go on describing them, you can kick back and relax and listen to our conversation with Rick and Brian from the Delta Generators.
Shovel past the crossroads and let me tell you, never felt so alive. I kept on a going till I got to the banks of the river mud. 2-year-old a traveler, I guess I'm leaving then, it wasn't in my blood.
We're here at the guest segment of the podcast, and Jason's gonna introduce our awesome first time guests.
Yep, absolutely. Really excited to have these guys on. Now, Brian, we know a second blues based rock band from the East Coast. So from the Delta Generators, we have on Brian, that won't be confusing, and Rick. How you doing, guys?
I'm doing great.
Doing awesome.
Before when we were just chatting, you guys mentioned GA20. How do you know those guys?
I've known Matt Stubbs since he was playing blues jams. He was probably about 12 years old. His father, Dale, is also a guitar player. And he was bringing Matt in when he was young. And I've done gigs with him off and on ever since. I haven't seen him much lately, which is good for him. But he and I actually did a project together just for the fun of it. We called it the Get Backs, where we were doing all funk and soul music. We actually recorded a little EP in his basement, which is a rarity. You can find that anywhere. It's actually pretty cool. So yeah, I've been good friends with Matt and been playing with him off and on for, gosh, it's got to be 20, 25 years or so.
And we got to mention our buddy Seth Miller, who pretty much made us aware of you guys and hooked us up with you guys. And so Rick, it's your brother that knows Seth?
Yeah, my brother Charlie, who's a guitar player in our band, knows Seth, I believe.
Jason, insert joke here.
Yeah, right. Well, I almost said, I'm like, boy, did they spend time in prison together? Like, you know. Seth is great. Seth is awesome. He knows a lot of people. I think he pointed us out to Aaron Coburn, who's actually from Ohio, but he saw her playing out in Boston. So we appreciate Seth. He is a great musician, and he always likes to point out other great musicians like yourselves in the band Delta Generators.
That's great. Yeah.
So
that's enough nice things about Seth, Brian. We can't say anything nice about him anymore.
Right. Now we know you guys are from the northeast of Boston area. So how did you guys get started in music, and then how did the Delta Generators get started?
Brian. Rick, I'll let you go, man, because you know you've been in the Generators longer than me.
Well, I got started in music from the get-go. I was played piano when I was 5, got my first guitar when I was 7, and just never stopped, you know. And picked up bass when I was 18 and kept on going. So the Generators was supposed to be a side project back in 2007. We started playing some gigs locally, and people started catching on to it. And then we made a recording. And then we started getting more popular, and we actually ended up doing a local like blues challenge to the Blues Society in Boston. And we won that, and that put us in the blues, down at IBC down in Memphis. And that made it even more popular, and recorded another album, kept on going up and up. In around 2016, our singer had left, and we were wondering if we're going to keep on going. And then Brian showed up, and he just killed it. And we love him. And that's been it ever since. We keep on recording and playing and do more and more shows, you know.
Brian, what's your take on the Delta Generators?
Well, before I talk about that, I also want to just point out that Rick is downplaying a little bit his earlier playing. He and his brother were both in Benjamin Orr's band, bass player for the Cars. Mm-hmm. And they both played in Ben's band for a while. And Charlie, I believe, even recorded with Ben, didn't he?
Did, yeah. Yeah.
And then Charlie was also in a band called Must that was a rock band that did quite well and did some tours, opened up for some big names. So, you know, they've got quite the rock pedigree.
Yeah.
Well, my take on the Generators was simply I had heard rumblings about them, but being a typical musician, you know, didn't really seek it out, you know. And I had a charity organization that I had formed called Blind Lemonade, where we were doing concerts and giving the money to homeless shelters. I did it for about 20 years.
That's a great name, by the way, Blind Lemonade. Like it's almost blues guy.
It's funny because when Farm Aid and Live Aid and all that stuff was going and I was just getting into blues, I came up with the name Blind Lemonade long before I came up with the organization. So I almost formed the organization so I could use the name. but we had hired Johnny A. You know Johnny A, guitar player out of Boston?
No.
He's got a name for himself. He goes out there. But we hired him to do a show, and Rick happened to be playing bass. And so we were talking after the show, and he gave me their latest CD, and I listened to it, and I was like, oh, okay, these guys are real. And I became a fan right away. I don't know how much time elapsed between that and when they asked me to join the band, but when they did, I jumped I jumped at the chance.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once, new quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Well, Brian, I mean, I know you kind of ribbed Rick a little bit about his background being extensive, and we'll get more into that, but you actually have a pretty extensive background playing in bands, too. You want to tell us a little bit about what you've done, who you've been part of?
Sure. You know, I guess my first real band was this band called the Radio Kings that was formed in 1991. We did pretty well for a local band, and we also won that blues challenge. Although much to the dismay of our local society, we opted not to go to Memphis. We didn't realize how much of a big deal it was. And two of the guys in the band had day jobs anyway. So it was like we kind of never got forgiven for that. But the Radio Kings did quite well. You know, back in those days, you couldn't just record a CD in your basement, you know. You actually had to have a record deal. You know, a record company had to decide whether or not you were worthy enough. And we got a deal on a label out of Memphis. Sam Phillips' nephew, Johnny Phillips, Ice House Records. And they signed us. We put on a few records. We ended up getting one on Rounder Records, Bullseye Blues, it was called. And because of those records, we ended up being able to tour. And we hopped in a Chevy van and drove around and got some interest in Europe. So, you know, we made a little bit of a career out of that band. After that band broke up, I've been able to, I was on the road with Otis Grand, this blues guitar player out of London. I did a stint as James Cotton's vocalist. And more recently, I was asked to join a band that was being formed out of the ashes of the Manish Boys, with Jimmy Bott, Kid Ramos, Anthony Gerasi, Willie J. Campbell. And we were called the Proven Ones and did a couple records with them and did some shows with them. Unfortunately, COVID completely torpedoed that project, but that's another story, I guess.
So Brian, when were you in James Cotton's band?
You know, I knew you were going to ask me that, and I'm just so bad. I'm so bad with dates. I'm going to try and guess, but I want to say somewhere around 2013.
Okay.
That sounds about right. Daryl Newlish was actually his singer, and Daryl had put out a record and wanted to take a few months off. And recommended me for the job, and I got it.
Right on. And I, if I'm correct, or Jason, like Eddie Harsh was in James Cotton's band, right?
I believe that's correct. Yeah,
Eddie Harsh, the former Black Crowes keyboard player that died some years back here, 2017. But that was like in the early 90s or even late 80s.
That was before he was with the Crowes. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I would say, what kind of, Brian, and Rick, we'll get a little bit more in your background too, but Brian, what made you want to be part of this band, the Delta Generators?
I loved the music, and I can just tell that they were real. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to sound snobby or anything, but, you know, there's bands that are doing it for real, and there are bands that are faking it. And, the, you know, the thing is nowadays, the bands that are faking it can put CDs out. So there's a lot of music to wade through. But when I heard the songwriting and the musicianship of the Delta Generators, I knew right away they were a real band. I liked that they were pretty much 100% original material. They had their own sound. I was just perplexed that the singer wanted to leave when I was happy about it. Because he's great. He's a great singer, great harp player, and a really good lyricist.
Yeah.
So, and we just recently did a 15th anniversary gig and invited him to come in and join us, which was a lot of fun.
Fun.
It's like Van Halen. We got Hagar come out and do some songs. You got David Lee Roth come out to do some songs. And poor Bostonite Gary Schroen sitting off the side somewhere.
Just like that.
I'm a big fan of Extreme, but the
I am too.
Van Halen Mach 3 didn't quite tickle my fancy.
Well, I think, and a lot of people said this, so what I'm saying is not out of the. But if it was more packaged like an Eddie Van Halen type of solo project with Sharon doing vocals, it might have been received a little bit better.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, because I think people were expecting, you know,
Van Halen.
Right.
It was definitely experimental. I think it was a lot of stuff that Eddie had, you know, done or collected over time that didn't necessarily fit in with what Van Halen was doing. And that was kind of the time to throw it out there. If I remember correctly, I am not a Van Halen historian, although it feels like I'm one.
So where you guys are from in the Northeast there, is there like a very strong blues tradition or scene? Like what's that like up there for blues and rock and roll? Like on a local regional level.
I think Brian would know it better than I did because you have played with more people. But
you know, the truth of the matter is, and I might get in trouble for saying this, but the blues scene in Boston is not very strong right now. It was extremely strong. I mean, there was a period there when, you know, you could go see a lot of local bands and a lot of local bands opening for national acts. There were certain clubs that had the scene there, and all of those clubs are gone. You know, we lost the clubs, and once again, I just think back then you kind of had to really put something into it in order to compete. You know, there's plenty of small blues pubs and with blues jams around. But as far as a quote-unquote scene, I think, you know, the 90s into the 2000s was a strong time for Boston. You know, Susan Tedeschi came out of that scene. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, the Radio Kings were touring. There was quite a few bands running around out there. I think now it's just not... It's just hard, you know. It's just hard to find, you know, places to play that really draw a solid blues crowd consistently.
Yeah, it's, I think too, like with Boston, the East Coast, blues-based rock bands, but not just blues bands, are really still popular. I mean, you had Aerosmith come out of there. I know the Crows Magpie Sludge, the version of the Crows, always drew really well in the East. You know, that style blues-based rock, and maybe not the blues scene these days. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess. You know, James Montgomery, of course, is still big up here. You know, and he definitely plays has a more of a kind of a rock thing going. He plays blues, but he's got players. I mean, his bass player was the go-to guy when Tom Hamilton was ill. His name is Dave Hull. And he played with Fahrenheit, with Charlie Farron, and now he plays with James Montgomery. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. What would you say, Rick? You know, Is there?
Yeah, the blues scene up here is really spotty these days. And you're right, Brian. It was like in the 90s, early 2000s, it was really strong. I mean, that's why we were kind of, when we first started this band, we're kind of on the tail end of that. And then it's hard to find places to play that actually want blues. You can find a place to play somewhere, but for the audience you want to get to, it's hard to get here.
So what do you guys think at that time period, though, in the 90s and stuff, there was a big draw to blues music in the East Coast? Because, I mean, again, you think of the East Coast, the Northeast. I mean, it's not like your blues hub where a lot of blues artists really came from.
I think it's because of that the generation, quote-unquote generation before my generation, the guys who I was going to see in the 80s and into the 90s, were some solid players and had some friendships from other parts of the country. Like, for instance, Ronnie Earl and the Broadcasters and Roomful of Blues had a really solid connection with the Austin scene. And they also would back the quote unquote real guys when they would come to town in the 70s. So they carried a tradition on into it. And then I think, you know, for me, in the 70s and in the 80s, I was listening to Van Halen. I was listening to Black Sabbath. I was listening to rock music. I wasn't into blues. I knew about blues. My parents took me to see some blues. But when I saw it live, when I was old enough to get into clubs, and then that coincided with Robert Cray, Stevie Ray Vaughan, the T-Birds got on a big label. So all of a sudden, the blues became part of the popular music, especially Stevie. He broke it wide open. Mm-hmm. And I think that carried into the 90s, and the blues became really popular, not just in the East Coast, but all over the world. And we kind of joked about it, some of the musicians later on, we called the year 2000 the Great Blues Depression, because the blues got so popular that it was overdone. And now all of a sudden, every little club had a blues jam, and every little blues jam had a blues band, and then you could start putting out your own CDs, and it became kind of cliche a little bit. It was a fad, and then I think it got burnt out. That's just speculation, but yeah. I think it's pretty accurate.
It's surprising to hear all this, because I would just assume, you know, probably incorrectly assume that any big city would have blues bands or whatever, where you want to call it a scene or bands playing or whatever. Because to me, blues has always survived through every kind of musical fad and trend, and it's just sort of survived. But Brian, you emphasize a good point there that it became a fad, I guess. And it's interesting to hear you talk about it, because you really put that in a good perspective that I haven't really thought about before.
Yeah, I remember doing a lot of corporate events and things where they were handing out Blues Brothers hats and glasses to the people. Like, the blues was actually a theme for their event.
Yeah,
it became a thing, you know, and the Blues Brothers movie was also part of that. But what people don't know is that, you know, Belushi and Aykroyd were real blues fans, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, the thing about the club scene up here too is that, and when I think back of all the clubs that we used to play, every single club that we used to play back then had a club owner who loved the blues. That's what they loved, and that's what they've had in their clubs. They didn't have anything else. Later on, a lot of those clubs, even though the owners left, they started thinking, well, we got to get in here, because we need to get the numbers going. And I think that the numbers on blues started to wane. So they started bringing in other stuff. And then, of course, you know, the jam band thing went through the roof. And they realized that they could get all those students in lining up around the block, you know. And, you know, you can't blame them. They're business people. But there's not that many clubs left that I can think of in the scene here where I could say, like, that guy is like a blues fan.
Yeah, I'm going to go over to Rick. Rick, what was your interest in the blues and kind of what led you get to where you are now and playing like this blues based rock music?
Well, it's kind of funny because I came to blues late. Like Brian, I was listening to rock in the 80s, you know, AC/DC and, you know, and other stuff like Iron Maiden and all that stuff. But and when the Black Crowes came on, I was like, that's a great sound, you know, like that's a great combination of blues rock. But I really started when I started. I came in this band because I was kind of the last person to join. They were like, they had a singer, a guitar player, and a drummer, and they needed a bass player. And my brother was like, my brother's a bass player, and I was like, let's try it, you know. And Craig, the original singer, really wanted us to do some kind of like original blues stuff, like and also old covers, you know, of stuff, and is really handpicked, you know, really curated. And so I learned a lot about it through playing those songs and getting into it more with this band. But then when we started writing our own songs, because our first demo was like just a bunch of covers, you know, but nice covers, mm-hmm. cool stuff. But we started doing our own songs. I started reaching back to more stuff. And I really fell in love with the blues, you know. That's how I came about it.
Yeah, and like for Brian Jones, not the other Brian, I think Brian, for us, a lot of it too is, hey, we like the Crows and that kind of music. And then you sort of find out what inspired them to do that or really, you know, they took to. And you kind of go backwards and like, you know, you learn about all these things. And really, much like you, Brian and I were metal guys and hard rock guys. Like that's all the same bands, both you and the other Brian, Brian T, not Brian J, talked about. Same thing kind of with our Live Evolution, right? Right, Brian Jones?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, Jason mentioned the Black Crowes, who, you know, if it wasn't for them, we probably wouldn't be doing this podcast. But, you know, at the same time, like I only got into them on their second record, but I have a friend who, he was a huge Stones fan. So he introduced me, you know, I'm starting listening to the Stones. Well, who did they listen to? It's like, you know, you get to the roots of what you know, turn them on, you know. And so, and you know, this goes back to the early 90s, but I still say now that my knowledge of blues is still in its infancy because I think there's just so much to learn. You know, it's just like a well that's, you know, never dry. It's always there to learn more.
And I was really lucky because in 1983, I turned 21, and that's when I started being able to go to clubs. And a friend of mine said, "You need to come down and see this band, Room Full of Blues." And when I heard that band live, that changed my life. And I became a groupie of that band and of the local bands and eventually the T-Birds. And I became a friend of theirs and then eventually a student in a sense. So they gave me a really solid education, you know. And I remember sitting in Ronnie Earl's living room at like, you know, 2 a.m. one night after I had driven him home from a gig, and he asked me to sing while he was playing guitar. And he says, "Yeah, do you know Stormy Monday?" And I said, "Oh yeah, the Allman Brothers song." And he said, "No, Brian, no, Bobby Bland." I'm like, "Who's Bobby Bland?" You know, actually wasn't even him. It was, no, I think it was a California guy, right?
I don't remember the original artist, but I do know the Allman. It's a cover.
T-Bone Walker. I think it's T-Bone Walker. Anyway, I got it wrong. It wasn't the Allman Brothers, you know, but that he hipped me to all that stuff. And he would tell me, "Oh, hey, Buddy Guy and Junior Wells are coming to town. You need to go see them." You know? So I got a good education from those guys. And then when I started doing it, I wanted their approval. So it made me listen and learn.
Oh, absolutely. I think we kind of all get to where we're at by the bands that we love and what really inspired them and the kind of the go back, you know, go keep going back until you get to the point where everything kind of started. Rick, for you though, like what I want to do is talk a little bit about your history. You and your brother played, you played with a legend from a Hall of Fame band when you were with Ben Orr. Like, what is that like? What do you learn? What's that whole experience playing somebody who's kind of been at the top?
It was first of all, I'll say that the whole, all the people in the band treated us very well. We were kids. I mean, my brother was 17 or 18. I was like 20, 21 when we started with that band. Playing bass for somebody who plays bass.
You know, right. Is that intimidating?
At first it was, but then it didn't matter. He really was kind to me. And
it wasn't just judging you every time you, plucked a string.
No, and I made sure to get my parts right for sure. Sleep, but it was really at first intimidating and then really fun, and lots of firsts, like first time on the road, really, and first time playing bigger shows. And one time I was doing a gig down in Baltimore, and we went back to the hotel, and we used to hang out like me and my brother would hang out with the crew more than the other band's members because we were younger. And we turned on the TV, and Fast Times at Ridgemont High is on the TV, and there's a scene in there with
moving in stereo.
There you go, you know it.
I know that scene.
That music.
Phoebe Cates, I know that one. Yeah.
You and every other man in this country.
That's right. Every good red-blooded American male. So what do you take from the experience, especially young, working with, a Hall of Famer to where you're at now? Like, what are those lessons learned that you apply?
I mean, you have to, we rehearsed a lot for that show because we rehearsed the whole show. And I learned what it meant to deke into rehearsals and work out a show. And Ben Owen was also a brilliant songwriter. And I kind of picked up some of his ideas of pop songwriting. Mm-hmm. Brian probably hates me for, because I keep on taking parts out of songs. Don't bore us, get to the chorus.
Gotta have that hook, man.
But it really does make a difference, when you listen to songwriting structure, that kind of thing. Ben Orr also wasn't just kind of throwing caution to the wind. He planned out what he did, both songwriting but also set lists and structure, and his whole career, he kind of took an arc to it. He made it a real thing that made it last, so it was amazing to be in that. And then I learned most of it when I left that band and started reflecting on what was going on, because from that point on, I wanted to do stuff like that. I didn't go back to many other, little kind of weekend warrior bands. I wanted to do real serious things. Like, I wanted to be a musician the rest of my life from that point on.
Yeah, it just would have to be an amazing experience, working with somebody of that caliber, has had those successes. He was leading edge of even all those videos on MTV. He even sang one of their biggest hits, Drive. He was a co-vocalist. I think a lot of people didn't realize that about the Cars. It wasn't just Rick Ocasek.
Yeah, it's interesting because I didn't really think about that either. We had the albums when we were young,
Yeah.
But you had to start thinking, oh, which one is Ben singing? Oh, that's the one. We did all his songs.
Yeah. Of course, but you had to, right? I mean, you got the guy from the Cars. You better throw a couple Cars songs out there.
He wrote some new songs too that in the studio that Charlie played on. They didn't do any. I didn't play bass on those tracks, but there's a whole album of new songs we had to learn as well. It's new stuff, it was great. And unfortunately, he got sick. He had pancreatic cancer, and he went pretty quick. So
yeah,
just it made me think about it. This is kind of a side thing, lighthearted. I swear I remember seeing in Guitar World, and this is in the 80s, Ben Orr, as one bass player to another. I swear I saw Ben Orr was in an ad. He had a Grammy bar in his bass. Do you remember that at all?
I don't think he could have. He has so many different basses.
yeah. I don't know how. Wait, do you have a whammy bar in any of your basses, Rick?
None of
Brian would yell at you, no whammy bar in the bass, please.
I can't remember who we talked to someone who had a.
I'm ready to try it.
Bryce from the Cold Stairs, remember?
Was that what it was? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He had one of his basses had a whammy bar on it. And Chris was like, nope, never touch that. That's a good a blues rock trio band, the Cold Stairs out of Indiana. You guys should check out. Not as quite as GA20 is very stripped down and kind of old school. the Cold Stairs are like more of a rocky, like power. I would call them more along the lines of like a Cream than anything else. Mm-hmm. Good band.
Yeah, they're really good.
They don't play the whammy bar on the bass in that band. Just so you know, that's a no. So how did all your experiences and like bring you to where you're at now? Like what's going on with the Delta Generators? Where you're touring? What kind of records you have out? Like where are we going with everything?
You know, I mean, one thing's for sure. The songs sound different than the first four Delta Generators records. The spirit of it is still there, but it's just, you know, the way that Charlie and I write is, you know, 9 out of 10 times, Charlie's just, he's just constantly recording stuff at his house, and he'll send me the stuff. Most of the time it's a full song with no words. Now, sometimes I might say, okay, look, you know, the way I wrote it, we're going to repeat that chorus, or we're going to do the bridge here. But for the most part, he sends me that stuff. And I'm sure that's what he did with Craig as well. Because I'm not a diehard, any type of a music fan, I feel like a lot of times I've chosen the stuff that's less blues, you know, and almost has more of a rock pop sensibility to it. Because I said before that, you know, before the early 80s, I listened to all that stuff, but I still listen to it. You know, I still love rock, but I also love bluegrass, and I also love country music, the old country music, you know, right. And I mean, I love mostly all styles. And so I think that's one of the bigger differences is that, you know, if you listen to what we've done, which is only that one EP so far. We did put out a live record, but the one EP, you know, a song like Bigger Than the Both of Us off that EP, you know, that to me sounds almost like, I don't know, something John Mellencamp would have put out or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. But when I heard it, I'm like, yeah, this needs lyrics. Let's go with this, you know? And I mean, we've got a song on this second part two coming out, which is called No Man Is an Island. And Charlie sent me this music, and it starts off with this very reverb drenched acoustic guitar, and I'm listening to it. And then when the thing kicked in, I was thinking, this sounds like Pink Floyd, you know? And so I was like, okay. So I was thinking, all right, well, Echoes, you know, I remember, you know, the way it sounded with Gilmore and Richard Wright singing harmonies together. And that's the way I wrote it, with that in mind. And I don't think there's anything on any of the four Delta Generators records that sounds like Pink Floyd, would you say, Rick? So the music's definitely changed, and we still do a lot of that material, though. So
that's interesting. Why is it changing a little bit? It's because, hey, there's a new vocalist. It's just an evolution. Are you guys trying consciously to do something?
I think because of Brian, but it's a new spirit, a new, you know, it's the band has always been a four part, like four people contributing. They come up with some stuff on their own, but they bring it to Jeff and I, and we put our own part to it, our own stamp, our own whatever, you know, what do you want to call it? But we like the four people in the band is just Delta Generators. That's the only way we're going to do it, you know. We also are not afraid to do what some people call them blues Nazis or blues purists, you know, like we don't want to stay in that, you know,
yeah,
in that one element, that because blues is a living thing, it keeps on progressing and growing. So we blues based, sure, we love the blues, we love the original blues, we love the blues based, like other things too, and we want to not limit ourselves to writing and recording and playing stuff, especially live, you know, make it feel good, and it feels good to play, it's part of our sound, you know.
Yep.
As you were saying that, Rick, it made me think of, you know, and others, you know, friends of ours and people we you know, hit on here and chatted with, kind of emphasize that too, where it's you know, we obviously have a deep respect for the 12 bar blues, but you will hear talk to more artists that are like, well, we're more like blues rock, or we're more than that, you know, that's sort of in there somewhere. And so I don't know if that's just an observation or what, but you know, yeah, it's interesting to hear you say that.
I think that we first called ourselves a blues band as a genre when we first started performing. Mm-hmm. So these days we call ourselves a roots rock band with blues influence, because it's wider, I guess.
I would call it too. And like your most recent record, and that's the one I think Brian was alluding to, The Lost Year Part One, is, Brian, that was your first one you record on with them, correct?
Yes.
So you're taking Brian, who's a vocalist, and you're writing lyrics and helping write the songs, and kind of your perspective is helping shape this more modern look at what the Delta Generators are.
But I don't think it's anything that we're trying to do. There's been no attempt to do that. It's just how it's worked out. You know, if you listen to the earlier stuff, you know, Craig's got a really, really awesome kind of like voice that's really kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's gruff, and it's really, I mean, it's just really great. And I can't sing like that. You know what I mean? That's not how I sing.
Yeah.
So I just think things have just changed, because that's just, and once again, I think it's also that Charlie's been sending me these things, and I sometimes I think I pick the ones that maybe Craig might have passed on. I'm just speculating, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So are you guys the type of band too, hey, if anybody brings something to the table, you're willing to listen and give it a try?
Oh yeah.
And so I play in a band. I don't do it for a living. We've been playing forever, but our sound's evolved over three records, and including this fourth one we're working on, where it's just somebody has an idea, we try it out, and like, you know, it's cool to do whatever. You might have a song that sounds punk rock, Americana, country, a straight rock, blues rock. Like, it's a lot more fun than like, nope, it's got to sound like this or fit directly in this kind of category.
Yeah, I want nothing to do with that.
So I want to go back to, you know, when we were talking about the scene and now talking about your live shows, and I'm looking back on some of your tour dates, and, you know, I see dates in New Hampshire and Rhode Island, and there was one in Indianapolis and Florida and stuff. So as you're talking about your area there in Boston, you know, does that mean, but what, Rhode Island and New Hampshire, are you finding more of a scene or welcoming vibe in other places?
Yeah, I think for us, it's just a matter of our situation right now. I mean, we're just not really able to, just because of where we are in our personal lives, mm-hmm. we're not really able to, like, say, be the band that can jump in a van and go out for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. And we've all had experience doing that. And I think for us right now, it's more about, we want to play choice gigs and play the places where people love the music. And I mean, we've all had experiences where we just, you know, you just got to go, you got to get it done. Doesn't matter where you play, as long as you get the gig. And I think for us, it's just, you know, Rick's got a job. I'm a farmer. Charlie and Jeff are both swamped with lessons. And so, you know, if you leave town, you're not just, you know, you're not just going out on the road. You're losing your income while you're here. Yeah. And then hopefully you'll make income out there. But it's not easy anymore.
Brian, what do you farm?
Before we go to Jason's question, I think I meant more like, are you finding when you do play out wherever that's not right in that Boston area, are you finding more people that like, you know, your style of music, where you say in Boston, there are not enough clubs or whatever, or like.
Yeah. I mean, when we played in Jacksonville, it was a blues festival and people loved us. But when we played in Indianapolis, for instance, that was a club that I played with the Radio Kings in the 90s. And, I called them on a whim just because we were like itching to kind of go out and do something. And we went out there and they paid us well to go out and play two nights. But the club was right across the street from the place where the Colts play.
Oh, yeah. Lucas Oil Field.
Yeah. And the club was the Slippery Noodle, which was right across the street.
That's a great name.
it's the oldest bar in Indy, actually.
Is it?
But they used to be a pretty solid blues club, but now it's more of a touristy type place, you know? Yeah. So whereas I think we won a few people over, and there was a couple of people there that were there when I was playing there in the 90s that came out to see me. But for the most part, you know, it was just kind of people, we were just kind of like there, you know what I mean? So it's hit or miss, you know? It's hit or miss.
Yeah.
It was a fun gig. Well,
especially if you're not touring all the time too and really building a fan base in a certain area, you're gonna be hit or miss.
Yeah, yeah. So we like the way it is now. You know, we're playing, we're being choosy about our gigs because the places that we play now, every single one of them is a place where people are there. They come to see music. They come to see us, or they're just coming because they heard about us. And, you know, there's no TVs on and all that stuff. And so because of that, we don't get to play as much as we want to, but we get to play and have good gigs whenever we play. And there's a new club that just opened up in Portsmouth a couple years ago that we've been trying to get into, Jimmy's Jazz. And we just got a gig up there. And they're a great club. And I saw them go up to some people while I was up there to see Anson Funderburg. And they told them to stop talking. came up to their table and said, you know, it was a slow, quiet blues. And they went up to the table and said, you got to stop talking. You know, if you don't want to listen to the music, then you can leave.
Yeah.
And that was impressive to me. Mm-hmm.
There for the music. Well, I want to get back to the one question I asked. What do you farm, Brian? I'm curious.
There you go.
Uh-oh. We're gonna see it. Drive tractor. So what are you doing? Like, what are you doing?
I raise organic and non-GMO pasture-raised pork and chicken.
Okay. So livestock farmer.
Livestock, and we do some vegetables as well, but we don't really sell those. And we also do this thing called Rent the Chicken, where we rent out chicken coops to people for the summer, which like is actually eggs. Very popular. It's like the main moneymaker for our farm, as people want to have chickens at their house.
Yeah,
they don't want to deal with wintering them. So we drop off the chickens, the coop, the food, everything that they need to go from May to October. And then I go back in the fall and I pick them all up. So that's what we do here.
It's almost like farmer camp. Like, you're giving somebody the opportunity to be a little bit of a livestock farmer on their own, like without having to buy in.
A lot of the customers do it because they've been thinking they might want to have chickens.
Yeah.
Not sure. And so we've had quite a few customers where I go back and I just end up getting an empty coop, because they've gone out and bought their own or built their own, and they buy the chickens from us.
Yeah. So, and I assume they're just for eggs, not really for the poultry. Yeah.
Well, they get the eggs. But no, they're not eating birds, but
yeah.
They get the eggs, but it's pretty expensive. So, I mean, I figured it out at one point that, you know, if you have two hens and they're laying an egg a day each, it comes out to about $20 a dozen that you're paying for those eggs. So it's more for the experience of having chickens. And some of these people are become quite attached to them.
I was waiting for Jason to try to tie this in, referencing a recent guest, but have you thought about getting duck eggs?
Duck eggs, yeah.
We talked to Brian Forsyth that used to be in Kix, from Baltimore.
He likes his duck eggs. Yeah, he has a duck egg person that he's got to get his duck eggs from. I thought we got a good kick out of that with Brian. Like, why duck eggs? And like, how do you get into eating duck? Like, it's just a, you know, it's a definitely a different thing.
Yeah, yeah. I've never had a duck egg.
I guess they're a little bit bigger and a little bit, I don't know how he described it. I know it's a little bit bigger, maybe a little bit richer of an egg, I guess. I don't know. Next year, rent a duck, rent a chicken, your choice. You can keep moving on up the poultry, you know, the bird scale. That's funny. Well, tell us a little bit about this most current EP, like The Lost Year Part One, and also what's coming next in terms of records out there.
Well, this new EP is, like Brian said, we, you know, kind of spread more our genre or writing, you know, not on purpose, but just happened to be that way.
Yeah.
The first one had a couple of songs that were different than our usual, you know, blues rock. And this new one has actually, I think, six songs, Brian?
No, I think it's five, right?
Five, maybe five. Anyways, yeah, what happened was we recorded all these songs during, right after COVID, and we split them up into two different albums because it was just easier to handle them. And also, they were sort of different animals on their own, but they do work together. So we're going to release it early next year. We haven't got a date to say right now, but you'll see it out next year. And I think it's going to be, people are really going to like this album. And we have a couple of surprises, right? Covers. So,
yeah. And we're currently planning to do a tour based in France in August next year. And because I'm sure that the majority of people over there have not bought Part One, the plan would be to print up a whole, you know, The Lost Year as a full 10 or 11 song CD and sell that over there instead of trying to sell two EPs.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one of the things we're thinking about. But on that first one there, you know, Inside Your Blue, we got some good airplay on satellite radio. We were in rotation. I was getting texts and calls from friends of mine all over. You know, you get the picture. You get the picture of their display, you know. Delta generator.
Oh yeah, they take a picture from the car and like,
yeah.
So
that was good.
And where do you record these records, Rick? Are we doing it with your brother Charlie? What are we doing?
Where do we record them?
Yeah.
We record them. Well, the last couple albums were in a place called Woolly Mammoth Sound, which is in Waltham, Massachusetts. And so I think since last two albums, not the live one, recorded it at the Spire, but. Yeah, so it's a great studio. They have so many gears already there, like drum sets and amps and things and guitars to try. And David Minahan is our engineer, and just gets great sounds, you know. So we recorded the fourth Generators album, Hip Shakers Heartbreakers, there, and just fell in love with the place. And so when Brian came on board, we said we want to go back there, you know. So.
David had a band for many, many years called The Neighborhoods in Boston. They were a great, great, great rock band.
Yeah.
What is your overall goal for the band? Like, where do you want to get to? Are you happy doing what you're doing now? Do you have aspirations for global conquest? Like, really, what's the Delta Generators direction?
I like to subscribe to the idea of be careful what you ask for. Everything is fine the way it is. And if something happens, great. But, you know, I just turned 60. You know, what am I going to do? Am I going to go out and become a rock star? You know, I mean, if we can get a chance, you know, You know, it would really be nice if we could get a chance to open up for somebody, you know, maybe do some shows with a band. That would be cool, I think. But for me, once again, it's like, I don't think about that stuff anymore. I'm just happy to play. I really, really love watching people get off on our music. And they do. They really love it. And I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, I would want to play with anybody else. This is my favorite band ever been in, and I just want to keep playing with these guys. I mean, they're fun to hang out with. They're, you know, serious about music. I can count on them, and it's just a fun band. You know, they all play so great. I mean, they're inspiring to be around and to play with. You know, so keep on doing what we're doing. Seems to be going well. So
it would be nice if we can get some more shows for August. Because we've got some festivals booked, so now we have a challenge, you know, to try and find some shows that we can use to fill the blanks in between. But it's a challenge because unless we can find a touring company to help us, then we'd have to find out about how we can rent our own backline and in a vehicle. Mm-hmm. And by the time all those expenses come, we might not make any money. But we're willing to do it together, you know, and. Because we just want to go over there and play, and you know.
Yeah. If I can make one wish, I want a booking agent.
Yeah, there you go. For those of you listening, you like the Delta Generators, you're a booking agent. Here we go.
So before we wind things down, we forgot to mention at the beginning, we like to do a lightning round of just silly random questions that Jason likes to fire off at you. Are you guys up for a lightning round? A short lightning round?
Absolutely. How about a white lightning round?
A white is that moonshine, right?
Yeah.
All right. I'm drinking coffee right now, so I'll pretend it's moonshine.
Yeah. And I'm drinking tea. So
God, we're so adults here, man. We're very adult. You know, we talked to all these rock guys, and you included, nobody's ever crazy. It's everybody's drinking a coffee or a tea or soda or something. All right, let's get in the lightning round stuff. We'll ask you a couple questions. So, Brian, you kind of hit on something that I usually ask everybody a little bit into it, but if you guys could choose any band to play a bill with, open with, whatever, do a tour with, who would be optimal to choose?
Any band?
Yeah, any band, alive, dead, whatever.
Oh. I think I'd pick Queen.
Wow.
I mean, that was the greatest. To this day, I saw them in Boston Garden on the Day at the Races tour. And still to this day, the best concert I ever seen. Freddie Mercury was in Thin Lizzy opening.
Oh, wow. Oh,
that's
wow.
An interesting bill.
So we'll kick Thin Lizzy out and put the Generators in.
Rick, what about you? Who would you choose?
Oh, God. I don't know. I guess Led Zeppelin, just because it's a big rock show that I'd like to be part of, you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure, man. And if, let's say, we'll ask you guys both this individually, but Brian, you open that show with Queen and Freddie and Brian, everybody else invite you on stage to participate in the song. Which one would you choose?
Which one of their songs?
Yeah.
Hmm. Wow. I guess Tie Your Mother Down.
Let's say that.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a rock and blue. It's blues. It's rock.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. That would be a good one. Rick, you guys are doing Led Zeppelin. You know, Robert says, come on up on stage. John Paul Jones is going to go over and play the Mellotron or something else. You're doing the bass. What are we playing?
Oh, probably The Ocean.
Oh, God. That is one of my favorite Zeppelin songs. Very underrated from Houses of the Holy. I love that song.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great riff, great opening riff. The solo is kind of cool. How it changed, I think it changes key like halfway through it or something too.
It's a cool song, and it starts off in a lot of time, which nobody realizes that. But it's
for sure. Great choice. I like you, Rick. Man after my own heart. All right. Close to the holidays here, close to Christmas. What? Give me your favorite two or three rockin' Christmas songs. They can be covers. They can be originals. And Rick, we'll start with you. Like, what's your go-to holiday rock and roll?
God, I mean, jeez. Rockin' Christmas song.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could take the Brenda Lee song and like rock it out, like make it really heavy, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people have, I think. A lot of people have. But you got Elvis, you've got modern stuff. You've got all this different things you can choose from. Like, yeah. For me, I'll help you guys. Christmas Wrapping from the Waitresses, one of my favorite. I also love
I was so Christmas. Gonna say that.
Yeah. Brian, I really like
the baseline.
You.
The baseline of that song.
Yep. So good. So good. Christmas Time, Don't Let the Bells In by the Darkness. That's another one I love. If you guys haven't heard that song, check it out.
Thank God. I didn't have to check this out. Yeah.
Brian Jones, do you have a holiday favorite rock songs?
I don't know. Bruce Springsteen.
There you go.
Santa Claus.
Run Rudolph. Oh, Santa Claus. That's the one he did. Brian T, do you have anything outside of the Waitresses that you really go to?
I like 2,000 Miles by the Pretenders. And it's not really a rock song, but one of my go-tos is always This Christmas by Donny Hathaway.
Good one.
Yeah. I just love his voice. I just love Donny Hathaway. Yeah. So that would be probably another one of my top ones.
Are you too familiar with Whamageddon?
I don't know that one. Is that a band or a...
It's a contest. Rick, are you aware of Whamageddon?
Oh, is it about Wham?
Yeah, befriend me on Facebook. We play it every year in December. So the goal is from December 1st until Christmas to avoid hearing Wham's Last Christmas. It's like Survivor, be the last person. It has to be the original. It can't be a cover. Can't be elevator music. Nobody can wham you by sending, like, you can't be set up. You have to hear it naturally in the wild, and we keep record, and people will post when they're out. So, again, the goal is to go as long as you can without hearing Last Christmas.
I just heard a cover of that today, yeah.
Oh, I can guarantee you there's no chance I'll hear that.
I mean, you can't go in public. You can't, you know, have the radio on a holiday station or anything, and that's kind of the fun of it all. I think I'm going to start next year, Brian, Mariah Geddon, where it's Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You, and we're going to do Whamageddon and Mariah Geddon. All right. Moving on. What was the first live show that you guys both have seen in your lives? Who was the band? And we'll start with you, Rick.
The first live show I saw was, I mean, like club show or like big concert show?
First time you remember going to see live music, your parents took you, a sibling, whatever.
I mean, when I was growing up, my stepdad played bluegrass. So I went to all kinds of bluegrass festivals when I was little. My first like sort of independent like club show with my friends, I went to the Channel in Boston and saw Suicidal Tendencies.
Oh, jeez.
Wow. The Gnostic Front opening. It was like,
Yeah. Did you get in the pit?
I had my first time in the pit. Yeah. I was like 13. Like,
yeah. That's rough, man. That's rough. And you survived.
I did. Tell, you know.
Brian, how about you? What was the first time you went and saw a live show?
I'm not going to be able to pinpoint one because my parents were huge, huge music fans, and they dragged me and my sister everywhere they went. I mean, I was literally like they were mostly jazz fans, but also my mother was huge classical fan. So, I mean, I grew up in Boston. I grew up in Symphony Hall in Boston. I grew up in the Jazz Workshop in Boston. And so they would take us to these clubs. And then there was all kinds of outdoor things. Boston used to have a thing when I was a kid called Summer Thing. And there was live concerts every weekend outdoors in various places in Boston. And they'd pack us up. So I can't really pinpoint one. The first concert I ever went to where I said to my parents, I want to go, was that Queen show. And they took me. I went with my parents. And my mother fell asleep in the, in the concert.
How does that happen?
Because she worked nights.
And
she had been up all day or whatever. I don't know. I mean, my mother could sleep anywhere. So she fell asleep in the concert. But that was the first time I ever went. And the first time I ever went to a concert where they let me go was Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band at Boston Garden. And man, that was a great show. Great, great, great show. What a live band he had. That's rock and roll.
Sure. Yeah, man. Boston music. Who is the greatest band or artist to come out of Boston? And Brian, what do you think? Your opinion. Got a lot of good ones. We've got the Cars, Aerosmith, Boston, the Pixies.
Jay Giles Band.
Jay Giles Band, yeah.
I'm going to say for all around spectacle and just a soundtrack of my growing up, Aerosmith. But live,
from the 70s.
But live, Jay Giles Band.
Yes.
They were an amazingly great, great live band. They're the perfect example of the sum is greater than the parts.
Oh, yeah. Like, you have to listen to them live to really get and understand who they are, right? Like, that's just not the recorded stuff.
Yeah. I mean, that's what they were. They were entertainers. You know, Peter Wolf was, you know, the second greatest front man ever, I think, except for...
They have a really good live album, right? From, like, the late 70s. Like, it's really... It's all pre-Centerfold stuff, like, which is the one song Full after House. Many decades, yeah.
It's called Full House.
Yes.
And also Blow Your Face Out. That's a double live record that was pre-Centerfold.
They had a post-Centerfold live record, too, I think, because... That was the first record I had on my own, like my first cassette, you know?
Yeah.
And I was going to say Jay Giles too, as far as bands.
Yeah.
The first album I ever heard from them was, I think maybe I heard Centerfold, but then I heard a live album and I couldn't believe what they were doing live. And it's so, I mean, that's one of the things that made me want to play music, like, you know, rock music.
Yeah. That's a great choice. And I'm glad, Brian, you brought that up because I was completely leaving out the Jay Giles Band. All right. So are you guys sports fans? Nope. Brian's a no. No. All right. We can't talk Boston, New York stuff. So we will move on from there. What is your favorite place to play a show?
Like,
well, now you're going to get us in trouble.
Like, what if you pick, like, we're going to play, we have to play one show. This is kind of our home base. We feel most comfortable. We love going there. What is it?
I'm going to say, I think for me, Rick, it's the Spire.
Yeah, me too.
Which is why we recorded a live record there.
Yeah, it's a combination of, it's in the hometown of where I grew up, Plymouth, Massachusetts. And it's an old synagogue or old church, basically, that was turned into a venue. But part of they leased the building, and part of the agreement is they couldn't change any of the structure, you know. So they originally had pews and everything else, like for seats. But it's a big enough venue to have like an event, like a theater, but it's not so big you can't see the audience can't see the artist. Maybe 300 people total, and you know.
And the sound is great.
Yeah,
sound is really good.
Right, churches are designed for acoustics and stuff, right? That's the whole. So there's a place in Columbus, Ohio here called the Bluestone, which is an old church. They converted to a music venue, and I've seen a lot of bands play there, and it is awesome.
Yeah.
In fact, Brian Jones, I'm going to see Them Dirty Roses Friday night opening up for who are they opening up for? I can't remember now, but I'm going to go see Them Dirty Roses playing.
At where?
The Bluestone. The Bluestone. Yeah, the Bluestone, that church that's been converted to it. Yeah. All right. Yeah. What is one venue you guys want to play that you've never played?
Any venue?
any venue, man. Anything's open. Small, big, in between.
Madison Square Garden.
Nice.
Wow. That's pretty cool. I mean, I've never played this venue. I've played this venue before, but not with this band. And I think that I would love this band to play the House of Blues in L.A.
Oh, very cool. Nice. Do you play that with Ben Orr's band?
Actually, with Johnny A.
Okay. Really? What do you like about that one?
It's just a cool setup. It's again a big enough venue that's like feels like an event, but intimate enough that you feel like it's a club. You know, it's like combination and it has a cool setup as far as where people sit and things like that. So it's fun.
Okay, if I'm ever in LA and get a chance to go to the House of Blues, I'll check it out. Madison Square Garden, of course, the Garden, legendary place. That's why people want to go. It's huge. All the big ones.
I don't think we've gotten these two answers before. We get a lot of Red Rocks and the Ryman in Nashville.
Red Rocks would be great.
Every once in a while, a Fillmore or something, but it's mostly Red Rocks and the Ryman that we get. So I do appreciate a different perspective on that. Okay, who is the last three artists you've streamed, listened to, played on whatever device that you choose the music from? Brian, do you know what those are? And if you use your phone, you can look. It's open book.
Well, I can tell you one of them is definitely Marty Stewart, because I went and saw him recently, and I've been totally hooked on his music. So I've been all over Marty Stewart. And I tend to go through these little things where I do a lot of driving, so I'll do a thing where I decide, like, okay, I'm going to listen to the entire catalog of so-and-so, you know? So I just recently did, I'm not through the whole catalog, but ELO was a band that I've been listening to lately.
Jeff Lynne.
Yeah. And I'd say who else? Magic Sam. I was on a bit of a Magic Sam kick lately.
Those are good choices and ones we haven't really heard before, Brian. I don't think too much.
No.
Rick, what about you? What do you got?
Okay. Well, I should be honest and say that I use my playlist to play for my classes as well. I'm teaching, but recently I listened to Couldn't Stand the Weather, Sivri Vaughan, and I also listened to Keith Jarrett, a piano player. So,
we need one more. We got one more.
How about what else do you have? Okay, I was listening to this for work, but I listened to the Randy Carlyle cover of Closer to Fine.
Oh, she's a hell of an artist, man. She's really blown up.
Yeah, she is.
Brian, these guys are great, very eclectic choices on both their music venues and what they've been listening to on their playlists.
Correct.
All right, last question for you both before we turn you loose back to farm and teach and whatever else is going on in your lives. Give us a band or artist that we'd be surprised to hear that you like.
Public Enemy.
Oh, I mean, who doesn't like Public Enemy?
Well, so you're not surprised? I'll pick another one then.
Yeah, give us another one.
All right, let me think. Go ahead, you go, Rick.
Geez. You'd be surprised to know I like.
Or a guilty pleasure.
Brian, I know why you said that, because Public Enemy being a hip hop band and you guys doing blues and blues rock, you wouldn't necessarily have a connection.
I mean, so many bands. How about
Suicidal Tendencies? Like, come on, like that would I'd be like, these guys like Suicidal Tendencies?
I mean, I like them back then, and I still like some of their songs. You know, it's they're a great band, and they had a thing. I chased that whole scene, like Anthrax and
Thrash. Yeah.
I'd say if we want to go down guilty pleasure mode, The Carpenters.
Ooh.
I really, really like her voice. as a singer. And I love
everybody her. Says she was a great drummer too.
Yeah.
I actually did a I played in the pit band for a Carpenters like tribute. And did a whole bunch of their songs, you know. So, and they show some clips of playing drums.
Carpenters is a great choice. I love it. Rick, are you going with Suicidal or somebody else?
Well, okay, Guilty Brothers. I listen to like Sade, you know, like
my wife, our wedding song was a Sade song.
There you go. See, she's everywhere.
Respect. Everywhere. All right. Speaking of everywhere, where do we send our listeners to go to find out everything about the Delta Generators, where you're going to be, everywhere, everything that's going on with you guys?
You'll find us on Instagram, Facebook, X, you know, all the places.
You called it X. Everybody calls it Twitter. Hey, you called it X.
I'm trying to be hip, you know.
DeltaGenerators.com.
Very good website. You can get records and digital versions of the albums and stuff on there. I see store, all that sorts of stuff. Contact the band. There's some video clips, a little bit of everything. All right, guys, thanks so much. Again, listen, they're everywhere. They're on all the social medias, DeltaGenerators.com. Check them out. They got a new record coming out sometime this coming year, Lost Year Part 2. And if you're going to be in France in August, check them out. Over to you, Brian.
Well, thank you so much to Rick and Brian from the Delta Generators. Like Jason said, the most recent record is The Lost Year Part 1. Part 2 is coming up. Go out and check these guys out wherever they play. So thank you guys so much for coming on. Means a lot to us. And we had a great time chatting with you. Can't do it again. Can't wait to do it again sometime.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much to Rick and Brian from the Delta Generators. Great to hear about, you know, history of the band and how that's all going. And I don't think we've had anybody from the Boston area. Brooklyn, just, a lot of Brooklyn people, but not Boston.
We had Matt from GA20.
There you go.
But I think he's in Rhode Island, but you know, they're known for that area. So this is now two that we have of this type of music in that area. And it was good to talk to him. They've got what we didn't get into, Brian, is a little bit of the history of both those guys. They've had really long sustained careers and played in a whole variety of different things. It's just hard to get into that within an hour.
Yeah, and Rick's been in a band with Ben Orr from the Cars. Very, very interesting.
And they played with NXS, Stone Temple Pilots, Aerosmith. Like, really, like, we didn't even scratch the surface on
that. Right. Yeah. Definitely, you know, interesting that they, you know, that Brian knows, you know, Matt from GA20. So it's cool to have that kind of connection. We didn't know about that before. So it's cool when that happens. And
talking to enough people now where we're, you know, we have a pretty big network, a pretty big family. When that, we're going to start coming across different names that we've had on.
Yeah. And also for like what these guys do, you know, to support the music and, you know, Rick being a music teacher, which isn't uncommon for us to come across. And now we've got a poultry farmer, not duck eggs, but, you know, close enough.
Right. If Brian Forsyth ever needs a chicken hookup, we know a guy.
Maybe he could get, a duck coop. Is there a duck?
That's
coop?
What I said, man. He can move. He can. Brian can move on to ducks and just go around the whole poultry. But what I really liked about them in the conversation, I kind of asked them, "Hey, what's the goal of the band?" They're happy doing what they're doing and where they are, and I think that is great. Play some shows, release some records, have a life, and like I think that's awesome that they're happy doing what they're doing.
Yeah, and very wide variety of stuff they listen to. I mean, Marty Stewart, Suicidal Tendencies.
If you had a tour together, it'd be the Suicidal Marty tour.
Yeah. Wow.
But no, good dudes. I like their music. You know, I was checking this stuff out. I really like what they're doing. And the second EP with Brian on it, I really am curious to hear what it sounds like.
Yeah, for sure. So, and thank you to Mr. Seth Miller, our buddy for hooking this up. So
that's right. Two talents, Aaron Coburn and now the Delgin. He's going to be our talent coordinator. Yep.
There you go. He doesn't know it yet. We'll tell him. So always remember, Southern Rock is reverent, blues is blood. We'll see you next time.
Inside of your head. It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.